Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. So on a spiritual path, she's asking, we talk about not being attached, but what do you do when someone you love dies, when you lose someone you love? How do you let go? So it's really important to realize that even though the highest truth, the deepest truth, the fullest truth is there's nothing but God, we're all just soul, the rest is an illusion. Even though, yes, that is the highest, deepest truth that we're given. Simultaneously, we are also having a very real human experience. And I believe very deeply in the perfection of God. And I do not believe that we would be given such an exquisite human experience with the capacity to love the way we love if we weren't supposed to love. To care the way we care if we weren't supposed to care. To bond the way we bond if we weren't supposed to bond. And so it's also really important to have understanding and compassion and space for your very real human experience, which is love and which is loss. And it's subtle, and it seems tricky to hold both realities simultaneously in your mind, but simply the attempt to do that is actually an extraordinary place of freedom. So what we want to do is try to hold in your mind, in your heart, in your experience, two seemingly paradoxic realities. One, there is nothing but God. The truth of who I am is soul, spirit, consciousness, never born, never died. And simultaneously, this exquisite human experience of love, of bonding, of caring, and then of losing. And of the sadness that arises in the loss. There's no objective measure by which sadness is a bad thing that we need to somehow do something about, like it were a contagious illness. Sadness is, I think, very beautiful. It's certainly the stuff that many of the world's most beautiful poems and songs have been written of. It's the fertile soil for really so much of the most extraordinary artistic creations in our world. And to allow there to be space for that, Because that's what's real. When we talk about mindfulness and presence, well, if there is sadness, and I try to push it away, I'm not being present. I'm judging my present reality. I'm saying bad, wrong, unspiritual, and I'm pushing it away. Well, there's no school of spirituality that says take your present reality and push it away. Judge it, condemn it, criticize it. Turn it into something different. So ensure that you allow space for sadness, especially when it's a recent loss. It's a very, very normal, natural, and again, I think beautiful part of the grieving process, as long as we don't have a brain that says, that's bad, that's wrong, get over it, move on, let it go, etc., etc., etc. If you can just create space and be aware that nature loves the rainy season as much as it loves the dry season. And that's, I think, true just as much when it's talking about our eyes as the clouds in the sky. And so if what's coming out of you is sadness and tears, okay, it's the rainy season on your face for a while. So be it. And that's okay. But simultaneously, we hold the awareness. And it may not always be easy, and that's okay, and it becomes kind of a pendulum swing. Sometimes you swing a little here and then you bring a little bit back here. You swing a little too much there, you bring it back here. Of the eternal nature of it all. Who we really are at the core, soul, spirit, consciousness, never born, never dies. As Lord Krishna says so beautifully in the Gita, cannot be cut by knives, burned by fire, dried by the wind, wet with water. So we hold that awareness as well. And we permit ourselves with full love and compassion and tenderness the full range of our human emotion. And then we hold a third reality simultaneously. So it becomes a little bit more of a balancing act. But the way that I have found to do this is rather than trying to squeeze more and more things into the same small experience of myself, if I can actually work on expanding my experience of self, then automatically there's room for more. So it's not that my sadness pushes out my awareness of the eternal perfection. It's that my experience of self expands to allow for the tears, for the loss, for the anger, for the pain, for all of that which comes up without losing this over here. And then it expands further into an awareness that says, and this takes a bit of a courageous leap, but here we are, so let's leap. What have you lost? And really ask yourselves that, because your mind is going to jump in and say, well, I lost my mother, my father, my child, my husband, my wife, my best friend. But don't allow the mind to answer this, because the mind is, it's like a computer. It's just giving you back what you've already fed into it. So if you want to go somewhere new, you have to go somewhere new other than the mind. So ask the deepest part of yourself you can access. What have you really lost? Are they really gone? Now, yes, of course, our culture says, of course they're gone. I buried them. I burned them. Well, that was just their body. Is that what you loved so deeply? Sure, we enjoyed that too. Sitting in laps is great. Holding hands is great. Hugging is great. But have you lost all of them? Are they really gone? Or is that also just your indoctrinated mind saying they're gone? And here's what's interesting. For most people who have lost a very dear loved one, we can actually still feel them with us. But the mind comes in and says, that's crazy, you need to let go, you need to move on, as though somehow the highest form of healing were to pretend they never had existed. Were to obliterate somehow their presence from the earth. Well, that's not only an insult to them, but it's an insult to you. They exist. They still exist. You've lost the form. And we allow there to be tears. We allow there to be anger. We allow there to be pain. We allow that full expression of emotion, of that, when it's real. Because the other thing that happens a lot is we end up kind of rehearsing our emotions. Oh, now I'm in sadness. Okay, I cry. Then my tears start drying. But the brain says, you can't be done crying. Oh my God, you just lost your mother, father, child, sister, brother, spouse. And so we start kind of cranking back on the tears. And actually, emotions are very interesting when you watch them. They're really like waves of the ocean, I have found. They come, they peak, and they recede. And they may come right again. And sometimes they may be a tidal wave. But they actually, they have that arc. It comes, it builds, it peaks, it recedes. And when we are present with our honest emotions, what you'll find, even in loss, is there's pain. Then there's love. There's laughter. There's anger. There's despair, there's fear. I mean, there's a whole range of emotions we feel. And they tend like waves of the ocean to kind of go one right into the other. And none of them is wrong, none of them is right, but it's important to simply be present with what's there and allow them to come and recede, come and recede, come and recede, and not grab onto them. Oh, now I'm in pain. Now I'm in anger. Try to just be present and real, not dramatic. Because the drama actually keeps us in the story, which is not the reality of the emotion. So be present with the raw emotion. When there are tears, let them fall. But when there's joy, let the smile be there. When there's laughter at a moment that you're remembering, let that be there. Allow them all to be present. And hold the presence of that person still with you. And that takes a somewhat greater expansion of the self. But just keep doing it. Just keep creating space within the self to allow that person to continue to exist, because they do. They exist in you. Yes, you can hear them. I know you can, and know you're not crazy. Yes, you can feel them. Know you're not crazy. Yes, you can sometimes even see them. Know you're not crazy. And yes, there's parts you miss. It's harder to touch them. Harder to hear them on demand. See them on demand. So we mourn that. But we don't give ourselves the histrionic drama of they are gone, all gone, forever gone. Because they're not. That which we loved, soul, consciousness, spirit, is within us. our love for them is still within us. And in our love for them is deeply embedded the energy of them. And allow that to be there. And don't tell yourself to detach. That just pushes it away. But instead, allow yourself to reattach yourself. To other ways of expression of love in the world. So you lost one habitual way that you knew to express love in that relationship. Okay, don't try to detach from that. But allow your love to find other expressions. It may be other people, it could be animals, it could be trees, it could be all of humanity, it could be anything. But allow that love within you to continue to express itself, to reattach itself in new ways to other expressions of that same divine as your loved one. But never, ever, ever tell yourself that sadness is not spiritual, that you should somehow be over it. It'll happen in due time. As long as you don't create a whole drama story around it, as long as you just stay present with the actual raw emotion as it's there, and you hold all three of these in your awareness as simultaneously as you possibly can, automatically you'll find a new normal. And that's an important thing also to realize. You're not going to get back to being exactly who you were before you lost them, because something in you has changed. Because there's a part of you that was based on your interaction with them, your relationship with them. And as that has changed, a piece of you has changed. And that's okay, that's beautiful. But recognize that it takes some time for a new normal to establish itself. Don't expect, when am I going to be exactly the way that I was before they died? You'll never be exactly the way you were. And why? Why take the experiences that life has given us and then try to obliterate them by going back to exactly how we used to be? We're given experiences to keep learning and growing and expanding. Use it. Expand. Grow. And allow a new normal to slowly, when the time is right, settle itself within you.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation.
I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
How can I maintain discipline when there are so many distractions in the world? So here's what's interesting. All of our teachings on how to live a spiritual path, the core teachings, the primary sources, you know, in school, right? We learn about primary sources and secondary sources and tertiary sources. So primary source, scripture. Secondary source, some commentary on the scripture. Tertiary source, somebody who's only read the commentary, now they're writing a book. Okay. So when we go back to primary source for spiritual living, it's scriptures. And what's amazing is the scriptures have been talking to us about disciplining our minds long before we had smartphones, long before we had social media, long before we even had TVs, long before we had phones. I mean, it's amazing because today we think, oh my God, there's so many distractions. And yeah, there are. And the term monkey mind is not a product of the ring, bing, bleep, blip, present experience that so many of us live in with our devices. This is a term that was given thousands of years ago. They were talking about how to tame the monkey mind. And so it's important to realize that the current distractions we have are just the current distractions. But the problem of the distractible mind, and maybe it used to simply get distracted by an apple hanging in a tree. Maybe it used to get distracted just by an ant crawling on the ground or the way the wind was going through the branches. But nonetheless, it was getting distracted. The fact that today I'm distracted by bleeping, blipping, blinking, ringing things is just a different form of distraction. But the teaching is the same, which is discipline and practice. It's funny because we all intuitively understand that every aspect of our body has to be trained. And so no one would come in here and raise their hand and say, okay, how can I learn to play Beethoven, like, in the next 3 minutes? I've never sat at a piano. I have no idea how to read music. But, yeah, I got about 10 minutes or so. Can you give me kind of the fast track to Beethoven? We would all understand, well, that's ridiculous. Aside from having to have somewhat innate skill, you need to spend years and years and years learning and then practicing and doing. And maybe if you are blessed, your fingers eventually may be able to make some sound that to an untrained ear sounds like maybe it could have been played by a student of Beethoven. Nobody would walk in here and say, you know, all right, I wanna be Magic Johnson. I've got 10 minutes. Can you teach me how to play basketball like Magic Johnson? Again, we understand that whatever it is we want to learn how to do, if we want to learn how to do it well, we have to practice. Singing, I mean, whether it's our lips, our tongue, our fingers, our arms, our legs, our feet, whatever we want to do. Any skill, cooking, doesn't matter what skill we're doing. We need to practice. But interestingly, when we're talking about the mind, somehow there's this notion that there's going to be some snap your fingers and you'll get it way to discipline the mind. And there isn't. Now, the good news is, so that's the bad news. The good news is that unlike playing Beethoven or playing basketball, going within and taming the mind is actually going into the source and the truth of who you are. So it's actually going back to who you are rather than becoming something new. So it's much more actually an unlearning of all of the dysfunctional patterns that we've learned rather than trying to learn something that's brand new that you may or may not ever be able to do, that you may or may not have the capacity for. This is going back to the truth of who you are. So it doesn't matter what your skill set is, right? I mean, I could play basketball from now until the day I died and I would never become Magic Johnson. I could take piano lessons from now till the day I died. I would never be able to play like Beethoven. But with the mind, because you're actually just going back to the truth of who you are, it's actually something we all can do. But the mind has gotten very out of shape. It's like if you say, okay, I have a 20 or 25 or 40 or 50 or 60-year-old child who has been spoiled rotten their entire lives. Everything they've ever wanted, they've gotten. Wherever they wanted to go, they went. Whatever they wanted to do, they did. And now, at 20, 25, 40, 50, 60, suddenly, you've got to discipline this kid. Well, it's going to take a while. Because if I've spent the last 20, 40, 50, 60 years of my mind developing patterns of whatever I want to think, I'm going to think it. It's positive, it's negative, it's true, it's false, it's spiritually uplifting, it's horrendous gossip, it's, you know, truth, it's fake news, it's judgment, it's jealousy, it's criticism, it's all. Whatever I want to think, I'm going to do it. Nobody can tell me what to do. I'm going to go where I want to go. I want to land up in a brothel. I want to land up in an ice cream parlor. I want to land up on a battlefield. Wherever I want to end up, I can end up. As Pooja Swamiji always says, no tickets, no visas required. I can go wherever I want to go, do whatever I want to do. And I've spent decades doing that. And now suddenly we come in and say, all right, fun's up. We're going to bring some order here. And so, of course, there's going to be kind of an internal rebellion. Who are you and where did you come from to tell me what to do? And this is where discipline is required. I used to be a counselor when I was in college. I spent my summers as a counselor at summer camp for the youngest age group. I had 4 and 5-year-olds and, I don't know, 25, 30 of them. And first day of camp, they are all over the place. Imagine 25, 30, 4 and 5-year-olds running around. They don't know you. They don't respect you. They don't care what you say. You are not their mom. And they're going to do whatever they want to do. Slowly, slowly, gently. No beating, no spanking, no name calling, no starvation diets, no nothing but gently, lovingly, but sternly. Making very clear who is in charge around here, what is acceptable behavior and what is not acceptable behavior. Slowly, 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 you can actually even get a large group of 4 and 5-year-olds in order. And after a couple of weeks, miraculously, they actually would do what I said, and they would sit quietly, and they were quite well behaved. You have to think of the mind like that. It's not about beating it into submission. Imagine literally that you were in charge of a bunch of little kids. No, you can't beat them. No, you can't criticize them and starve them and tell them they're horrible. You can only use love and tenderness and compassion and stern discipline. And this is really how we work with the mind. Bring it back. Bring it back. Okay, I'm meditating. It wanders. Just bring it back. Not you horrible thing. Stupid, worthless. No. Not allowed. Just bring it back. Just bring it back. Ask yourself, when you find yourself talking to yourself, ask yourself, if I were a kindergarten teacher, would I get fired for saying that to a child in my class? And if so, don't say it to yourself. If it's not acceptable language to be used for a child in your care, don't say it to yourself. So we just bring it back gently. Bring it back. Bring it back. Bring it back. And whether it's in meditation or in moving through our world, mind has gone to judgment, bring it back. It's gone to jealousy, bring it back. It's gone to separation, bring it back. It's gone to past or future, bring it back. Slowly, slowly, slowly. And feel free, by the way, to use gentle systems of rewards and punishment. Do you make it a day, full day without any judgment? Great. Give yourself a hot bath or, you know, whatever feels like a nice, actually rejuvenating reward. Did you find that you continued to judge, you continued to get angry? All right, maybe no dessert for you tonight. No problem with that. You can use some gentle rewards and punishments if you need with the mind. That's all right. It really does function very much like a small child. And just slowly, 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 you'll get it under control. But the problem is when we let it run rampant, wherever it wants to go, then you lose control completely. And this is why discipline is required. And discipline yourself, not just the mind, discipline your actions. The more discipline you can bring in the whole life, the easier it is with the mind. So try to bring discipline to the whole life. Bring discipline to what you eat. Make some discipline about what you're eating, whether it has to do with sweets, whether it has to do, whatever it may be. If you're not vegetarian, become a vegetarian or give up a certain percentage of the meat in your diet. Discipline your food. Discipline your sleep. Maybe get up 15 minutes earlier every day. But try to bring about a full life discipline, not just so that the mind feels it's being punished. But okay, here we are embarking on a whole new way of living. And what you'll find interestingly is when there is discipline in your schedule, discipline in your food, discipline in your life, it's much easier for there to be discipline in the mind. So try to bring that into every area of your life as well. And it'll happen.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
had time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation.
Is there one element of sadhana that is most helpful in achieving communion with God? So sadhana, of course, is our spiritual practice. Is there one element of that that's most helpful in attaining that oneness of God? Yeah, surrender. For sure. And the reason is you can do everything else. You can learn everything there is to learn. You can do all of the things that you're supposed to do. But until and unless you let go of the wall that is between you and God, everything else you're doing is just being piled on to that wall. It's being stuck on to that wall. And that's the dilemma. It's like my favorite story of the man who is ready for enlightenment. He thinks he's ready for enlightenment. He deems himself ready for enlightenment. And he goes to visit this guru who's, it's been told, this is the guru, this is the one who's going to give you enlightenment. So of course he has to walk through the rivers and climb the mountain, because it's not a story if they don't walk through rivers and climb mountains. And he gets to the cave at the top of the mountain and bows down at the feet of the guru and tells him, I'm here for enlightenment. And here's what I've done, here's what I've studied, here's what I've learned, here's what I've achieved, and here's my challenges. Here's what I need, here's where I'm stuck. And the guru says, have a cup of tea. And the man says, tea? I didn't come for tea. I came for enlightenment. I don't have time for a cup of tea. But the guru says, have a cup of tea. All right, what's he going to do, right? So the guru goes in the back. He makes tea. He comes back. He brings the teapot and two cups, and he puts the cups down. And he starts to pour, and he pours, and as he's pouring, the cup's getting fuller and fuller, and he keeps pouring, and now the cup is overflowing outside, and tea is spilling all over the ground, and the man says, stop, what are you doing? The cup is full, it can't hold anymore. And the guru says, your mind is just like this cup. You're so full of what you think you know, what you think you've done, who you think you are, that there's no room for me to give you anything. And so this is really what it's about in terms of connecting with God. We can attach all of the learning, all of the achievements, all of what we have done, but all we're doing essentially is sticking them up on a bulletin board that still is between me and God. There's this wall between us, and all I'm doing is tacking on that wall learning and knowledge and achievements and good merit and punya and good karma and here and there. But all I'm doing is stacking extra things on this wall that still stands between me and God. And so if there were one sadhana, well, you've got to make that wall crumble. And the only way to do that is surrender. Because that wall, God hasn't put it there. Our highest selves have not put it there. The universe has not put it there. Our egos have put it there. It's actually really quite simple. The egos have put it there. It's the ego that says, this is what I want, this is how I want it, this is when I want it, and if I get it, then I'm happy and all is good, and if I don't get it, then I'm not happy and things are bad. Because you can't be in communion with God and absolutely irate at your neighbor at exactly the same time. They don't go together. You cannot be screaming at your family members, beating your children, yelling at your colleagues, employees, whoever it may be, and in communion with God at the same time. The attachment that I have to how everyone else in the world acts is what's keeping me from being connected to God. That attachment that says, here's how it has to be. Now, this doesn't mean that you become lackadaisical employers. It doesn't mean that you let your employees, you know, steal from you and walk all over you and cheat you and not do their work. It's not that. That you let your children, you know, eat all kinds of chocolate cake before dinner. It's not that. One can very easily enforce systems and rules and discipline and order without losing yourself in the process. It's not the rules or the system or the order or the authority that keeps me from God. It's my attachment, my emotional attachment to how people are being. It's that sense of how dare you? Who do you think you are? What do you think you're doing? I was in peace and then you came along. You made me in a bad mood. You ruined my peace. You're the reason I'm angry. That's what keeps us from God. Because what that saying is, I'm only okay when you do what I want. And the you could be a spouse, a child, a parent, an employee, the weather, the stock market, the traffic. Doesn't even have to be a human you. But as long as we've got this sense of here's how it has to be, that wall I have built, that box I have created in which I am okay. If the universe acts like this, I am okay. That box I've created is the box that keeps me separate from God. And so surrender is a surrender to God's will. Now, it's important to realize surrender does not mean I become a doormat, because of course the next question is, well, so what about, you know, self-esteem? What about protection of our home, of our company, of our family? What about, you know, my own self-respect? Surrender to God's will does not mean we surrender to someone else's ego. Doesn't mean we surrender to someone else's ignorance. And that's really important. Surrender to God. Surrender to God's will does not mean however you treat me, that's going to be great. Whatever you do, no problem. We have a duty to ourselves, our lowercase s self, the physical body, a duty to our capital S self, the true highest divine self, to use this life to experience truth. That's what we're here for. That's why we've been given a body. It's why we're here. To experience the truth of who we are, to experience oneness with God. That's according to Indian spiritual tradition, why we get human birth, why it's the pinnacle of evolution. Because in a human birth, with the capacity we have for consciousness, we don't all use it. You look at nature and you realize a lot of nature is a lot better behaved than humans. A lot more loyal, a lot more predictable. The reason that human birth is the pinnacle of spiritual evolution is because we have this ability to look at our own consciousness and to say, I am not that thought. I'm not that anger. I'm not that lust. I'm not that greed. I'm not that competition. I'm not that jealousy. I'm not all of the ways that I'm feeling myself pulled. I'm not that sadness. I'm not that history. I'm not the abused. I'm not the abuser. I'm not the color of my skin. I'm not my bank account. I'm not my sexual orientation. I'm not any of those things. We have the ability to look at ourselves and to realize that. To realize that's just a product of the physical body, which in and of itself is a temple, which is also why it's our duty to protect it. We say, Sharirad Ek Mandirad Hai. It literally means the body is a temple. It's a temple because God lives within it. If we say the divine lives in our hearts, well, then it means the physical walls, essentially, of that are a temple. So the body is a temple, so we protect it. We don't get walked all over. We don't become a doormat. But we don't allow, and this is the surrender, we don't allow my emotional state, my grounding, my anchoring, my identity, my sense of worthiness in the world, my sense of who I am in this world to be dictated by how people treat me, by who raises me up, who beats me down, who praises me, who criticizes me, who's richer than I am, who's poorer than I am. Who's more successful than I am, who's less successful than I am. I don't let any of that dictate my sense of self. So we surrender to God. And what do we surrender? We surrender attachments of here's how it needs to be. We don't surrender goals, by the way. We don't surrender energy. We don't surrender interest. We don't surrender initiative. That's the stuff that keeps it. That's what God has given us to be on earth as tools of the divine will. Our compassion, our creativity, our initiative, this is what fuels us. We don't surrender that. It's not that we become listless and do nothing. It's that we surrender the attachments, as Lord Krishna says so beautifully in the Bhagavad Gita, to the fruits of our labor. So we are dedicated gardeners. We plant our seeds. We till the soil. We plant them as well as we can. We water them. We shine the sun on them. We love them. But we don't lose ourselves in what fruits come out of them. We understand that's not in my hands. We surrender that. We surrender that to God. And we surrender, most importantly, we surrender our egos, because that wall is the ego. The ego is the one that says, me, mine, I. My guru Pujaswamiji says, the I, Whether it's in the beginning of a sentence or the middle of a sentence, it's always capital. So it's the only letter that's always capital, even when it's in the middle of a sentence. And when it's vertical, he says, it serves as a wall between us, I. But that same I, he says so beautifully, if you bend it, becomes a bridge. And so this is when we talk about literally breaking the wall of the ego. It's taking that I and we bend. When we do namaste to each other here in India, it literally means the divine within me bows to the divine within you. Divine within me bows to the divine within you. Why do we do that? Why do we bow at the feet of saints, at the feet of our parents, in temples, at the feet of that which is divine, to remind us to keep bowing, to keep bowing, to keep bowing, so that the ego loosens its grip a little. The ego doesn't want to bow. The ego says, you bow to me. Why should I bow? I didn't do anything. I'm the great one. I'm older. I'm smarter. I'm richer. I'm more handsome. I'm more powerful. I'm better. I'm humbler also, by the way. Right? These are the games of the ego. You should bow to me. But we keep bowing. We keep bowing. We keep bowing. Reminds us. Bend the ego. Bend the ego. Bend the ego. It's that wall. And it's a wall not just between us and God, but between us and all of the manifestations of God here on earth, our family, our friends, our communities. If you think in your life for a moment about, if I said, think about the single greatest thing keeping you from peace today. It's International Peace Day. If you think about what is it in your life that keeps you from peace, the thing that keeps you when you sit down to eat a meal, that makes your stomach kind of in knots and makes you not always able to digest well, that keeps you up at night, not necessarily every night, but what is that thing? And what you'll realize is, each of us in this room will have a different thing, but they all boil down to one core fundamental truth, which is something in the universe is not going according to how I want it to. I've got a plan, I've got an agenda, and something, someone is not following instructions. Or I'm afraid that they won't. Either it's already happening, or I'm afraid that in the future they will not follow my instructions. People in my life, the stock market, the weather, whatever it may be, my health, I've got an agenda, and someone, something is not doing what I want, or they're not going to in the future. And what you realize is, wow, how interesting. If I simply could let go of that wanting, that attachment, that sense of how I think it should be, maybe it wouldn't keep me up at night. So whether we're looking for just peace in our relationships or communion with God, that wall, it has to break. I was last week watching a show. I was on an airplane to Spain and I was watching a history show on the fall of the Berlin Wall and how no one thought it was ever going to fall and that there was no possibility, like never in a million years is it going to fall. But it did. And if nations, countries, politicians with all of their own agendas and everything can actually come together and get that wall down? Well, surely when it's just between us and our own egos, us and our own agendas, us and our own attachments. Surely we can get that down. Because the reward is everything. The reward is that connection with God. Think about being in love. Think about being in the arms of the loved one. Just close your eyes for a moment. Picture being in the arms of the beloved. Doesn't matter if it's a romantic beloved, if it's your mother, your father, your grandmother, a child, the tree you love. Just imagine yourself locked in an embrace with the beloved. Now imagine that between you, there were 6 inches of plywood. Okay? Between the two of you, 6 inches of plywood. Does it feel so good? Does it feel so good with 6 inches of plywood between you? Of course not. So whether it's the arms of a physical beloved or the arms of God, when we've got a 6-inch wall between us, you lose the experience. So we get rid of the wall. And slowly, slowly, every day, just allow that wall to crumble brick by brick. You may not necessarily have to break it all at once. If you can, fantastic. Take it out brick by brick every day. Can you let go of one thing every day? Something that you wanted, that you were about to get upset about, and then you decide, let this today be the brick in the wall of my ego that goes. Okay, no problem. Thy will be done. A brick, every day, one brick. Slowly, 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 slowly. You'll find the wall crumble.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.